A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 47. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about The Tomorrow People. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. We're talking about the next stage in human evolution, and it's arrived, and can a group of teenagers with special powers save the planet Earth? So this is the basic premise of The Tomorrow People, an extremely popular children's science fiction show that ran on ITV, the independent television network in Britain, and it ran between 1973 and 1979. And it was, as I say, it was very popular, quite long running, went through quite a number of seasons and episodes, Brian.
Yes, it lasted for 8 seasons and a total of 68 episodes. Those were 25-minute episodes, serialized into 2 to 6 episode stories. And it was indeed quite popular at the time and has also lived on in somewhat legendary status and is very well remembered.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very fondly remembered by fans of British TV in the 70s. And we're going to talk about some of the reasons why that is in a few moments. And we're also going to talk about The Tomorrow People beyond the original 8 seasons. We're going to talk about the remake that came about in the 1990s on British television. And we're also going to talk about some other bits and pieces, in particular some audio dramas that have been very successful and very well received more recently. So lots of stuff to get to.
Absolutely. So the idea is that humans are evolving from Homo sapien into Homo superior, but only the very first of the Homo superior are there on Earth, and there are just a few of them, and they're teenagers. The youngest of them are about 11 or 12, and they go up to in their upper teens. And they are saving the world on a regular basis, of course. And they are also helping others who break out. And breaking out is the process of becoming a tomorrow person, which generally happens to children and teenagers when they're 11 or 12 or even in their mid to upper teens later on. And there's always this painful process when they're going through these changes and the difficulties in acquiring the various abilities that they get.
That's right. I mean, the breaking out process isn't very nice, and it's portrayed as not very nice and enjoyable. And part of it is because of these special abilities that they're going to acquire, which will help them, as you say, save the world so regularly. Because the Tomorrow People do have special powers, and I suppose the first one is telepathy. And so when it's part of the breaking out process, we get these young teenagers basically hearing voices inside their heads and not being able to cope with it. So that's part of breaking out, and that's one of their powers, is telepathy. They also have the power to move things with their minds, so they have a sort of telekinesis. But I think the power that's probably best remembered from the series is teleportation, or as it's referred to in the series, jaunting. And all Tomorrow People can teleport and sort of move instantly from one place to another. And it's it looks very cool in the series, and it has this cool name, Jauntin, and I think that was part of the attraction of the Tomorrow People for children in the 1970s. And they have a few other individual powers that crop up, I think, really when the scripts and the plots require them. So some individual Tomorrow People have special powers of their own. As a character whose special power is opening locks, some of them develop or display healing abilities again when needed to. And one of the Tomorrow People has this special power of sort of creating telepathic projections or telepathic images, which can be seen by other people. Although I think later on in the series, it's revealed that in fact all Tomorrow People can do this and create these visions, which I think they give a special name to. They call them hallucinations, I think, sort of compounding illusion and hallucination. I think that's right, Brian.
I think so. There was was a sense that some of these individual powers, like the projections and healing and the like, may have been skills that they learn over time. Once they have the telekinesis and so on, they can learn to do other things like opening locks and so on. But the things that they really used regularly were the telepathy, communicating with each other, and jaunting was used extensively as well. And in addition to these powers they have, there are some other tools they have. In particular, there is an artificial intelligence, a sort of biological computer called Tim. And Tim is a computer that deals with them and is like a guiding sort of father figure or avuncular figure. And Tim is also telepathic and deals with their jaunting and their other abilities very well and can connect to other computers and get all sorts of information. So Tim is a sort of very powerful hub for them.
It's a remarkable computer for them to have. They call Tim an artificial intelligence. Certainly, I think the first time I'd come across the concept of an artificial intelligence in science fiction. And it's an interesting sort of part of the Tomorrow People, that they can always talk to this computer who will guide them and lead them and who will control various parts of their abilities for them as well.
Tim was definitely a central part of the show.
Yeah. And one of the other central parts is that it's set up very early on that the Tomorrow People are obviously they're the good guys and that they've developed all these abilities. And in a way, these abilities have come at a certain price, and the price is that they are basically entirely peaceful, or rather they are limited in that they can't cause physical harm to other creatures, and they can't kill even, and they can't allow people to be killed even by their own inaction. They're the peaceful good guys of the plot, although they have to save the world from other people with far more violent tendencies than them.
There was definitely a strong pacifist and anti-war thread and message that runs through the Tomorrow People, especially in the earlier parts of it, but throughout even. It was a strong component of what they did with that show. There was also the element of the Galactic Federation. We don't just have a group of telepaths, people with special powers on Earth. We also have contact with aliens and a Galactic Federation, basically of Homo Superior, of other human or more or less human beings who are also telepaths and have the same powers as the Tomorrow People. And they are based on what I believe is a large space station called the Galactic Trig. And the Galactic Federation comes into things from time to time, and we gradually learn that the Tomorrow People are becoming the representatives of Earth to the Galactic Federation. And the Galactic Federation is really this powerful alliance of telepaths. And all of them have these same limitations that they cannot kill or cause harm. So there is a larger world to things and a larger universe, as opposed to just the Tomorrow People running around through London and the like. We get to see them going off on spaceships and various things of that type as well.
I think we get told fairly early on that the Galactic Federation contact the Tomorrow People as they sort of break out into the next stage of evolution. I mean, that's what's happened to them in their species, and they make contact with other worlds when Tomorrow People start to evolve there, and that's what's happened on Earth. So the Tomorrow People, as we've said, they have to save the world repeatedly, and they seem to be Earth defenders, and in particular they seem to be Earth defenders against a variety of alien creatures and alien races that we'll encounter throughout the 8 series, who will basically by either, you know, by deliberate intent or by accident seem to cause, you know, or threaten harm to Earth. And fortunately, we have the Tomorrow People standing in the way to intervene and prevent us coming to harm. But there's also, I think, quite interestingly, again, I think right at the start of the Tomorrow People, there's a very strong suggestion that they're clearly the next stage in human development, and that when there's enough Tomorrow People, they will basically take over the Earth themselves. And in some of the time-traveling episodes that we'll discuss, we find out in the future that basically that has happened, that Homo Superior will eventually replace Homo Sapiens on the planet Earth.
Yes, that eventually everyone who's born would be a Tomorrow person.
Stephen, wake up. It's all right. There's nothing to be frightened of. Stephen, listen to me. I want to help you, but I can't unless you come back. please, Stephen, come back. Stephen, please come back. You've got to come back. If you don't, you'll die.
So we have a variety of characters in the Tomorrow People, mostly, of course, the Tomorrow People themselves. We have John, played by Nicholas Young, who was the first one to break out and one of the oldest Tomorrow People as well. He's sort of in his mid to upper teens, I guess, and he's one of the only characters who's there for the entire series. And he has a bit of an older brother or father figure kind of role. He is clearly the leader, and he's the one who's calling the shots. In addition, the other sort of senior Tomorrow person is Elizabeth, played by Elizabeth Adair, and she was a student teacher who breaks out at the beginning of the second season, and John and Elizabeth are the same age, so while he's really the one who's leading and in charge, she is sort of right there with them and a key part of things for most of the series as well. So the two of them sort of become the center of this operation.
Yeah, they're the two senior members of the Tomorrow People, and they're in, I suppose, they're in the majority of the episodes. I mean, certainly John is in all eight seasons, and he's very much the sort of center of the Tomorrow People, although his big brother act can become a bit smug from time to time. But we'll talk about that. And then we have another Tomorrow person called Stephen, played by Peter Vaughan Clark. And it's Stephen breaking out that is the sort of starting point of the very first story of the Tomorrow People, a series called The Slaves of Jedediah, because the Tomorrow People become aware that there's another person breaking out. Stephen's going through this ordeal of hearing voices and not knowing what's going on. And then we have this mysterious and somewhat villainous figure called Jedediah, who also seems interested in Stephen and what's happening to him, and wants to track him down for his own villainous purposes. And that's very much the sort of the start of the Tomorrow People.
Despite the weaknesses in that first story, The Slaves of Jedediah, the moments of Stephen breaking out and being helped through it by the others were quite good. They were quite memorable.
It's quite interesting stuff. I mean, you know, we'll talk a bit more about breaking out in a moment, but it is quite memorable. And Peter Vaughan Clark actually did a fairly good job of showing how difficult it was in those opening episodes. Later on, Stephen would leave the show and he would be replaced by a character called Mike, although they were in some episodes together. And Mike is a young Cockney, sort of typical London boy who has this strange ability to open locks, which is one of his first abilities that develops. And he appears at the start of the fourth season of The Tomorrow People. And Mike was played by a young actor called Michael Holloway. And one of the interesting things, which we should probably just mention in passing, was that Michael Holloway was at the time the drummer in a reasonably popular teenage boy band called Flintlock. And in fact, the band make a cameo appearance in one of the seasons.
That one story rotated around the fact that Mike was playing in this band.
So we've got this chap from a sort of boy band, and it is very much like that. It's as if a member of a popular boy band now appeared in a children's TV show, and so it brings with it all the particular fame and the sort of pin-up aspects of it. And certainly for 70s fashions, I think Mike takes most of the prizes in throughout the Tomorrow People.
Yes, the one thing that the Tomorrow People certainly is dated.
Yes, it's of its time in terms of the fashions.
Very much so. There were a number of other Tomorrow People that sort of came and went at different times. Carol and Kenny, played by Sammy Windmill and Stephen Salmon, were there at the beginning. Carol was the one who was helping Stephen through the breaking out, and Kenny was sort of the younger character for the audience. They were only there for the first season, and they were sort of replaced by Elizabeth when she came in the second season. We also had Tyso, played by Dean Lawrence. He was there for a while in the middle of the series. He was from a gypsy family of a sort, and they had some things that tied in with that at different points. Tyso was played by Dean Lawrence. They also had Sutai, played by Misaka Koba, a Japanese actress, and she fit in the later parts of the series, and again, they were trying to internationalize it and make it a little more of a global phenomenon. And finally, for the last couple seasons, we had Andrew there as well, played by Nigel Rhodes. Andrew was a young Scottish boy, and he was introduced with this ability to project these telepathic visions.
And then the other character, which we've already mentioned, is a very important character throughout the 8 seasons, is Tim, the talking telepathic supercomputer. And he was voiced by Philip Gilbert, who, as I say, was there throughout the whole run of the Tomorrow People. And he also, they gave him a sort of cameo role in the series as well. So the actor actually appears on screen a couple of times, but predominantly as the ambassador of the Galactic Federation, a character called Timus.
That's right. The idea was that the voice and the mind of Tim were based on not Timeness, but one of Timus's clone brothers, and one or two of the clone brothers show up at different times as well. So Philip Gilbert has a few roles there, and Tim, of course, is an alien computer, which explains why he is such a sophisticated computer and has this artificial intelligence and the telepathic abilities and so on and so forth. Now, there were quite a few villains that were involved throughout the series. Of course, there were a number of alien races with a variety of types of alien makeup and costumes, which were not always the most convincing. But there were quite a few different aliens that showed up, sometimes recurringly a few times, and sometimes they'd only show up once. And in some cases, they were invading or deliberately trying to cause harm to Earth, but in other cases, they weren't. Or in many cases, the Tomorrow People were going off to some other planet for one reason or another, or going off in spaceships somewhere, and they would encounter different aliens when they're doing that as well. So there were all sorts of things that were involved.
Yeah, and as we've said, some of them didn't intentionally mean harm to the Earth. I mean, there's an interesting story early on, which we'll talk about, where it almost seems like part of the alien's natural life cycle will unintentionally harm the Earth and its inhabitants, and the Tomorrow People have to intervene and bring about a hopefully successful and peaceful resolution. And there's others, I mean, along the way where things just seem to go wrong, or the Earth gets in the way between two warring species of aliens. So there's plenty of encounters.
They also frequently go up against people that are from Earth. So you end up with them going up against spies and secret government organizations. The Tomorrow People themselves are victimized and exploited on a number of occasions. They even had one story that dealt with the KGB. That was kind of interesting. And they dealt with the mafia at one point. So there were a number of different things based right on Earth that they had the Tomorrow People going up against. And that was kind of interesting, too.
Yeah, it is actually. It's a good feature when they have sort of shadowy government agencies who, you know, once they learn of the existence of people who can teleport and read minds and move things with their minds, obviously certain government agencies find this very interesting and seek to use the Tomorrow People for their own not always pleasant goals. So that adds an extra element, which works very well. And then along the way, as well as the alien races, the Tomorrow People over the years bumped into a variety of robots and spaceships and weird and not always wonderful monsters. And they even had, as I've suggested earlier on, as I've mentioned, they had encounters with various time travelers.
They definitely had a very broad scope in how they set up their stories and how they set up the conflicts and who they were going up against. And that was something that was quite fun that they were able to have such a variety there.
So we've mentioned this concept of the Tomorrow People being homo superior, which is how they refer to themselves, and being the sort of like the next step in human evolution. Now, obviously, the Tomorrow People weren't the first to do this. It was something that had come up in science fiction before the 1970s, and it had even come up in comic books, most notably in the X-Men comics from Marvel Comics, where even characters like Magneto, I think, used the expression homo superior to refer to the mutants in the X-Men back in the 1960s. And we've got a brief item of trivia on the subject of the X-Men. If you're interested in the X-Men from the movies, you may know that in the comic books now there is a line or a series of comics called the Ultimate X-Men. And rather strangely and bizarrely, there is an Ultimate X-Men book called The Tomorrow People. And if you've not come across it, but if you actually look at it on Amazon and look at the cover of this book, if you're familiar with the Tomorrow People series we're discussing now, you'll recognise the Tomorrow People logo, and the font is exactly the same. And they seem to have borrowed the font from the 1970s TV show for a much more recent comic graphic novel.
Despite the fact that, as far as I know, there's no other connection between the X-Men and the Tomorrow People, the ITV series.
Nothing else that we know of, and you know, we're aware of this book. We, neither of us had the chance to actually read it yet. So if you're a comics fan and you happen to have read the X-Men Tomorrow People book, and if there's any other connection between the series and the X-Men, do let us know, because we'd be fascinated to hear about that.
I did see some reports of people who were Tomorrow People fans buying that book because of the Tomorrow People logo on it, and finding, I believe, that there wasn't much of anything in common.
Right.
Interesting stuff. There were a number of familiar ideas in the Tomorrow People, of course. Teleportation, telepathy, telekinesis. The Tomorrow People brought all of them together and gave us this sort of cohesive idea of these people who had all of these powers, and that there was this larger universe of people across the galaxy who had these powers, and that this was what the new way that humans would be, having these powers and being peaceful. That was the direction that we were going in. And that was a nice idea and a nice presentation.
Yes, as you say, it brings it all together, and the result was very popular in the 1970s. I haven't been able to find out, you know, viewing figures, but I know that it was, for ITV, the television network, it was incredibly successful, and I think there was no problem with renewing this show for 8 years. It had that combination of these sort of young actors who were very popular at the time, and as I said, some of them were quite well-known pinups, and it span off into the teenage magazines and things like that. And as we've said, it's very fondly remembered, the Tomorrow People. Probably part of its appeal, I think, was that it tapped into certain teenage ideas. I mean, obviously, the concept of breaking out is very similar to some of the experiences of adolescence. And I think there were certain familiarities there that people, you know, young teenagers who were going through difficult times themselves, saw something in the Tomorrow People which they recognized and they sort of understood. Plus, of course, I think it taps into that very common teenage fantasy of what would it be like to have special powers and special abilities that would make you stand out.
Sure, and it glorifies these characters who are sort of outsiders to everyone else, which, of course, is how a lot of kids will feel as well. The budgets for the Tomorrow People were small. No, you know, no question about that. It was not a high-budget show. The sets, the effects, the costumes, they were all quite weak. There were, you know, lots of wobbling going on. And as far as production values went, it was not especially interesting. But these ideas made it interesting, and it became this sort of cult classic on the backs of these ideas and the kind of appeal that it had at the time. So it was a good example of something that really could be appealing, despite the fact that the visuals, in a number of cases, just didn't stand up.
And we also have to say that it was led, as we've, you know, mentioned, by child actors or by teenage actors who really have to carry the show. They lead it, and they don't get an awful lot of support or, I suppose, you know, leadership from more established adult actors, because most of the main characters are in their teens. And so if we compare it with something, some other shows that we've talked about from this era, from the 1970s, I mean, I'm thinking of like Time Slip, where they have powerful actors like Dennis Quilly, who can sort of carry the show and give some leadership to the young actors. And the same with Children of the Stones, when we discussed that. I mean, some very impressive child actors in that. But again, they have these very powerful actors to lead them, like Gareth Thomas and Ian Cuthbertson. And in the Tomorrow People, we don't get that. We just have to rely really on our teenage actors.
Yes, there were some issues with the acting. The teenagers, and in some cases even younger kids, really held most of the screen time. You know, if there was anyone else involved, it was usually the villains of the piece or the odd adult they're dealing with here and there, or Tim or Timeness. And Tim is just there as a voice. So they really are left having to carry a lot. Now, getting a little more into the production of things, The Tomorrow People was created and written by Roger Price, and it was one of a number of shows, as we've discussed before, one of a number of shows for ITV that was intended as a rival for Doctor Who. And it certainly had less budget than Doctor Who, and it shows. Doctor Who, at the time in the 70s, was certainly not a high-budget show and had production value issues of its own, but The Tomorrow People had even more severe ones. It was definitely something that had a bit of a Doctor Who feel in the sense that they had this very broad scope where they could deal with present-day London, or they could deal with being out on spaceships somewhere, and so on and so forth.
Of the various candidates that ITV had to compete with Doctor Who, this one perhaps was the most successful at the time. The Tomorrow People, as you've said, was quite well-liked and probably competed with Doctor Who in the ratings for a while. And as you say, Roger Price, this was very much his show. He wrote, I think, all the episodes in the original series.
There were a few that he didn't write. He wrote almost all of them.
Right, right. And I think he directed a few as well, didn't he?
I think so.
He'd been influenced by science writers and science fiction writers. And in particular, he was influenced by a chap called Dr. Christopher Evans, who, as well as being a science writer, had also edited science fiction books as well. And one book called The Mind in Chains was reasonably well known at the time. And I think Roger Price was quoted as having taken a lot of his ideas from that book. And Evans also, on the science front, wrote a book called The Mighty Micro, which was about the microprocessor and microcomputers. And that was later picked up by the BBC and used as the basis of their series on the microcomputer. And in fact, the computer which they launched called the BBC Micro. So he was fairly inspirational. And of course, he crops up as the scientific advisor on The Tomorrow People, and he's credited in the end credits.
I don't know how much scientific advice was actually involved in The Tomorrow People, because they didn't seem to go for accurate science as a priority.
No, not at all. I think it was probably just a name check for the original ideas. And there's just one other name check as well I should mention, again, another piece of trivia, because Roger Price had actually met David Bowie on another TV show that he was involved with and was directing before he went on to make The Tomorrow People. And it's not entirely clear who used the phrase Homo Superior first, but certainly David Bowie had put that phrase in his song Oh You Pretty Things, which came out in 1971. Whether Roger Price took it from Bowie or whether Bowie took it from Price, nobody's entirely sure.
Yes, the phrase Homo Superior has been used in a number of things. As you said, David Bowie and then the Tomorrow People and a number of other things since. It is tricky to say where exactly it came from. The Tomorrow People was a production by Thames Television for ITV, as we mentioned. Ruth Boswell was involved as producer for quite a bit of the series when it started. And she had also been involved in Timeslip earlier. And Vic Hughes picked up as producer later on. We also have to mention there was an opening title sequence for The Tomorrow People that had a very stylized 1970s look to it that was quite neat, and also had theme music by Dudley Simpson, a very well-remembered, fondly remembered theme. And Dudley Simpson, of course, was a big Doctor Who composer at that time in the 70s as well.
Yeah, the opening credits and the music are just fantastic. And I think, you know, people who remember the Tomorrow People from the 70s will probably remember a couple of things. They'll remember Jaunting and how cool it appeared. But I think everybody remembers the fantastic opening titles with this series of images flashing towards you on the screen and Dudley Simpson's music. And it's just wonderful. If you want to walk down memory lane and you haven't seen it recently, pop off to YouTube and just watch the opening titles. They're brilliant.
So, next time, as we complete our discussion of the Tomorrow People, we'll talk more about the Tomorrow People and their gadgets, all this great alien technology that they have, and some of the highs and lows and the remakes and revivals and all sorts of things with the Tomorrow People, so that'll be fun. You can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.britishinvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for us on Facebook, you can find us there.
And on Facebook, you will find details of our upcoming shows for the next 3 months, so you can get in on the discussions in advance.
That's right. So thank you for listening. We'll finish up our discussion of the Tomorrow People next time. This is Brian from Canada, signing off.
And until next time, this is Eamon from England saying goodbye.